Okay, I'm feeling kind of basic today. Top five side ones, track ones. Janie Jones, Clash, from The Clash. Let's Get It On, Marvin Gaye from Let's Get It On. Nirvana, Smells Like Teen Spirit off of Nevermind.
Oh no, Rob, that's not obvious enough, not at all. How about Point of No Return on Point of No Return? Lewis, so you can get up.
Shut up. White Light, White Heat, Velvet Underground.
Okay, that would be on my list.
Though not on mine.
Massive Attack, No Protection. The song is Radiation, Ruling the Nation.
Oh, kind of a new record. Very nice, Rob. A sly declaration of new classic status slipped into a list of old safe ones. Couldn't you be any more obvious than that, Rob? How about, I don't know, the Beatles? How about Beethoven? Track one, side one of the Fifth Symphony. How can someone who has no interest in music own a record store?
From NPR Music, you're connected to all songs considered best opening cuts on a record. That's why we're here today, and I'm here with Carrie Brownstein. She's in Los Angeles. Hi, Carrie.
Hi, Bob.
And Tom Moon. Tom's in Philadelphia.
Hello.
This isn't a bad one, huh?
I'm sorry, who is this?
Let's hear him. A little obvious there, Bob. Ah, well, I'm Rob. You used to laugh about everybody that was. The cool thing about that opening track is, you know, 1965, when Highway 61 Revisited came out, albums were more or less just singles with a bunch of fillers. And that really, I think, one of the reasons I wanted to pick that was because I think it really spoke to heralding what the rest of a record might sound like. And I couldn't think of a better cut that did that right off the bat, that early on.
I feel like I'm on the show with Grail Marcus, but thanks for starting out that way, Bob.
That's okay. Hard not to. We're going to talk about opening cuts. I got that started because I did a blog post after listening to Exile on Main Street, and then moments later listening to the Sleigh Bells' new record, and they both just had extraordinary opening cuts, and it just got me thinking. We put a post up just to see what some reaction might be, and immediately, first day, you know, a few hundred posts, and they continue. So you can go to the blog and look at more. And we're here to talk about some of the obvious ones, and let's just do some pet ones as well. Let's see. I'm just gonna pick from this list of stuff I have here. If you picked it, then you tell me about it.
It's all good.
Here we go.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else. The afterworld. A world of never-ending happiness. You can always see the sun. Day or night. So when you call up that shrink in Beverly Hills, you know the one. Doctor, everything will be alright.
Tamon, you want to give us some context for this Prince record?
Well, for me, first of all, to start a record with a sermon like that, you know, rubato, not much happening, just sort of spoken word, that's pretty audacious. And then for it to set up the rest of Purple Rain, I mean, it's not like some side one, track one's a complete microcosm of what we're going to get next, because the record is so all over the place. But by the time he gets through his little speech and you know, the groove kicks in, it's like, you know, you are ready to go with him and you'll follow wherever.
Let's pick another.
Just a little loving early in the morning beats a cup of coffee for starting off the day. Just a little loving when the world is yawning makes you wake up feeling good things are coming your way. This whole world wouldn't be half as bad. It wouldn't be.
that was my pick. That, of course, is Dusty Springfield with Just a Little Lovin' from an album called Dusty in Memphis. And, you know, basically, Dusty Springfield, up until this point, was kind of just like sort of a, not even really with the Blue-Eyed Soul category, just kind of this British pop singer, you know, with these catchy hits, and she just wanted to reinvigorate her career. And this song starts off an album which just basically says, you don't know me, I will be a legend. And she became one with this album. And that song is amazing, and it leads off what turned out to be probably one of the greatest albums of all time.
Let's hear just a little more. I'm going to change the mood. Ready? Set.
It's hard being a man, living in a garbage pail. My landlady called me up. Ooh, she tried to hit me with a mop. I can't stand it anymore, mom. I can't stand it anymore, mom. Oh, I can't stand it anymore, mom. But if Candy would just come back, it'd be all right. Yeah, if Candy would just come back, it'd be all right. Come on, baby.
I live with Lou Reed, of course, and this is the first solo record from Lou Reed. A lot of anticipation back then about what he was going to do a few years after the Velvet Underground. No one heard from him, and you know, in terms of music making, and that record kicks off so wonderfully. I think that first Lou Reed record's an incredibly underrated record. It didn't get rave reviews by any means, and got panned, in fact. But I love it, and there's songs like that and Ocean. When you think of opening tracks, can you put them into any kind of categories? You've been going through and picking these things out. Have you seen any trends or thoughts that you have about these things?
I thought of one that was just—it's a game changer. In that, I put the Led Zeppelin tracks, opening tracks, in that, a lot of which were listed on the blog. Pretty much, someone listed one from every one of their albums.
Every record, yeah, isn't that something?
Nirvana, Nevermind.
Can we play Immigrant Song? That was a great excuse to play Immigrant Song.
Sure.
Here we go. And someone pointed it out with Led Zeppelin. I mean, we can go through every one of the, certainly through the first six records without any problem, as great cuts. And like I said, we kicked this off with the Rolling Stones, a lot of classic rock stuff. So I say rocks off, and someone says, no. You're all wrong. It's from Sticky Fingers. It's Brown Sugar. And I say, oh, yeah, that's pretty darn good, too.
Sympathy for the Devil.
That's
Give Me Shelter from Let It Bleed, which
that's
might
my
be
favorite.
The one.
Oh, let's
yeah,
do it. Let's
that's
do it.
The one, Tom. That's the one.
Okay, I'm gonna get there. Didn't put that in my little playlist. God, I hope I have it here.
That's so passive aggressive. You're like, no, I disagree.
And oh, gee, too bad we don't have it.
I don't even own that song because Exile.
There goes that argument.
So much
I used to have it till you put it on the list, and then I took it off. That would be Jack Black, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I'm just reading the blog, and I'm just looking at some of these posts. This one says, Cinnamon Girl, Neil Young's opening chords. The chord just sucks you right in. Here's one, this guy Jeff lists all those Zeppelin cuts. Good Times, Bad Times, Whole Lot of Love, Immigrant Song, Custard Pie, In the Evening. Then he goes through a whole bunch of the Pink Floyd stuff. I feel like I'm on a classic rock show, but it's okay. These feel good to hear again. Running with the Devil, Van Halen, and I had your... Hang on a second. There you go. Sorry. That was even more passive-aggressive because I had your microphones down.
Oh, my God. I'm sorry. I didn't know this was a solo show.
See what happens when Robin's not here? I got... too many things to juggle at once. And, you know, the guy took the day off because of his birthday. I think that's lame.
I think that's lame, too. I don't know if Tom was implying that that was the best opener on any Rolling Stones album, but I think that it is. That defines the whole era. The whole era.
Don't you think? Yeah,
yes,
and like you said about Game Changers, I mean, it's one of those where even though it follows from in that cluster of the three great records, you hear this and it's like it takes a minute to grok that this is with that intro, that this is even the Stones where you think they were,
right?
You know, I feel they're like, we're going to go into a different place here.
Yeah, isn't there an entire children's choir on that song? It's amazing.
I think they grew up right after they sang that song, however. Yeah. let's completely do something different here.
In the wee small hours of the morning, while the whole wide world is fast asleep, you lie awake and think about the girl and never ever think of counting sheep.
Want to set the scene, Tom?
Well, you know, you were talking about Dylan thinking about records in conceptual fashion. Well, Frank was doing that in the 50s, and by the time he gets to this is like 1955, and he's done a couple of these sort of thematic swing records, and this one is sort of a heartbreak. It's a breakup record. It has a lot to do with his relationship with Ava Gardner, and he as you can hear from that, he's sort of shattered. He's trying to figure out, you know, what makes sense in the world after this epic love. And just from those few bars we heard, you sort of get what the mood's going to be in that whole record. And, you know, you put that on, and if you're not ready to, like, you know, grapple with, you know, the huge category romantic disappointment, you just have to pick it up and take it off and put something else on.
The string arrangements, was that Nelson Riddle?
That is Nelson Riddle. But what's interesting is it's not as, like, sort of busy and arranged as some of the other stuff that Nelson Riddle was doing with Sinatra at the time. It's a lot of it's like trio with some sneaky strings in the back.
I think one of the things when we talk about Game Changers, we think of that in terms of how it changed landscape and music. On a very smaller scale, great opening tracks completely shift and change the room you're in. I mean, the mood you're in, everything that surrounds you. That's right, it does. And that one just was perfect. And I think a few of the trends that I've noticed, and we'll hear some of them, certainly in the ones I picked and others picked, is the two main things. One is that they could start off really, really slow, the slow build, and then get you. And then the other thing that seems to happen, and a lot of wispy stuff, a lot of, like, air. There's a whole lot of those. And then the ones that just kick in real hard. Carrie, I want to play one of yours because it kicks in real hard. And then I want to come back and talk to us, maybe some observations you've had looking through and thinking about opening cuts to great albums. This is from one of my favorite albums ever. I'm so glad you picked this. We'll be right back.
your new dreams daily. Father's contradiction. And breaks your new dreams daily.
The Gang of Four. I haven't listened to the remasters, which is this is from the Entertainment Record. This is a remaster. Boy, it sounds so good.
Yeah, that bass is so loud, which is, I mean, one of the things that's most surprising about that album and about the genre of post-punk in general is how it just reconfigured the instruments in the mix. And all of a sudden, something like bass, you know, was put above guitar and played as if the bass and the guitar were two leads, especially with Gang of Four. You had two chief songwriters and lead singers, and so you have these dueling vocals and these, you know, competing guitar riffs and highly politicized lyrics and angular and terse riffs. And it's just one of the most, Entertainment was one of the most influential, turned out to be one of the most influential albums, totally informed music up until today, all through the 90s and the early aughts. But this song is Ether. I mean, you just don't even know what you're listening to at first, but you know you love it and you're tense the entire time.
I love the way the guitarist and the drummer work together, more so than the drummer and bass player. I think that's sort of what you were saying, is the whole shift of the way instruments work with one another. And that, I saw them live back in when this record came out, and unforgettable show. Love them.
Jealous.
Well, but I'm old.
Okay.
Not jealous.
You're right.
Yeah. So, Carrie, have you been going through this and looking at the 500 or whatever blog posts we have, any observations in what makes a great opening track or what surprises you about opening tracks?
Tom and I were talking a little bit about, you know, the opening track, it used to be, and it seems like, you know, one of the things that became obvious reading the blog posts or the comments, and then in my own thinking, was that most of these albums, there were not a lot of contemporary albums. You know, people were going back to these really, to a time when they really listened to records, and when you actually pressed play or put the needle down and you did listen to the first track. Because often now a single is released and that ends up being track four and you maybe never listen to the album in order.
They're not conceived the same way they were conceived.
Exactly. So
well,
this
certainly
is like,
not listened to that way. They may have been conceived, but out the window.
Right.
Out the window.
And a first song used to be the mission statement. What is the first thing you want your listener to hear? And if it's a new band, you know, you want a change in the weather when somebody presses play. For a band that's existed for a while, you know, you want them to know that the first song is often the weirdest song on subsequent albums because they're saying, look, we're doing something different for the first time. And then tracks two and three, you realize, oh, they're still the same band. But, you know, they're trying all this, you know, on all these new
I'm not in
affects.
Complete agreement with that second part because I think a lot of times it does foreshadow the whole record, which is and can be, and when they're really, really great, they are completely different records than the one that came before. And when a great opening track really works, it does all those things. It says, hey, we're doing something different, and this is what you're in for. I'm just, again, looking through the blogs, and this noisy cats are we individual says, shuffle play on my gizmo has reminded me a lot of stuff that are no longer in heavy rotation, but dang, every once in a while, you hear a great opener, and you have to play the whole album. And I think that is so true.
That is.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it, because you know, that's what an opening track should do, is make you want to listen to the album in order. I guess the other thing I was surprised by was how many songs that you love that you assume were the first song on an album, but weren't. There's a lot of bands that actually didn't put that one epic or iconic song as the first one.
Somebody told me, and I think this is a blog post maybe to do, which is, and I've heard this from actually three different people now over the course of about the last 18 months, and they've said to me, everybody knows that track three is always the best track. You ever heard that?
Yes.
That and also track four, same way.
So it's like the cleanup hitter in baseball?
Yeah. One of the blog posters made that analogy, and I think that can be true. I mean, you know, it's all different.
You know what else we're totally leaving out? And perhaps someone mentioned on the blog, but when you used to record albums, you actually had two first songs because you had side B. And I'm serious, you had to think
side
about
side two, track one.
Yes, that is very important. That is just as important.
That's gone. But,
yeah,
but
I think about that a lot. The Way Young Lovers Do, which is the beginning of side two of Astro Weeks by Van Morrison. And the first side has been very sort of languid. And side two, track one, bam.
Yeah. That's why often on CDs, song six is also amazing.
Hmm. Yeah. I've always thought that they should put a gap of time, the rough time it takes to get from couch to the player back to couch again, or mostly back to couch again.
We have lost so many people under the age of 25 to this,
this conversation.
Yeah. Yeah.
But something that pertains to them too, and that I've thought about when I was picking these, some of the ones that I love, is the words. I mean, the first time I heard Urge Overkill's Sister Havana, which is track one from that record called Saturation, the intro wasn't all that remarkable. It has like that starting out guns are blazing kind of thing. But the first line that Nash Kato sings is, come around to my way of thinking. And to me, that's like, you know, that's a genius way to start a record. It's like, all right, here, I'm going to throw down and I want you to come along.
Another one of the swirly starts. Let's go to one of Carrie's, which is this will work. Carrie, that was a last-minute switcheroo.
It was, yeah, and I should let people know that I switched from the Raincoats to Judas Priest. Because I love that song. That is Exciter, and it is very exciting. And it's from their album Stained Class. And Judas Priest, I am actually a huge Judas Priest fan. Their first albums, Rock-A-Rolla, Sad Wings and Destiny, were much more operatic and almost, you know, kind of more almost like sci-fi albums. You know, they had these like these dark journeys and, you know, they kind of went off into the ether. And then Stained Class, which came out in 1978, it's just they streamlined their songwriting style, and it kind of became what people sort of know Judas Priest for. You know, the operatic Rob Halford vocals and the, you know, just shredding guitar. But that I love a drum fill at the beginning of an album. You start with the drums and then the guitar kicks in. It's exactly the way you imagine a journey of a song. You know, you start rudimentary and you add on to it. And I think that formula has worked over and over again, and it's always exciting.
Here's one like that. And the gallop in the drum is what I hear a lot in these opening tracks. Here's a gallop. Well, here's another one that's not much different that I picked. Doesn't have the gallop, but it's the same. It runs the same pace. It might even be the same key. That was, of course, Talking Heads. This is Roxy Music from Country Life.
I got another one, another gallop for
you. Oh, good. Let's listen to this kick in. That's the thrill of it all. What do you got, Carrie? What's the gallop?
I think Fleetwood Mac has a gallop on their...
Great. Do you think I have Fleetwood Mac in my library?
Are you kidding? You don't? I'm walking out of here.
Oh, the show's over.
Oh, my God.
Tusk.
No, not Tusk. What's that song?
It's not this, is it?
Maybe it's not the another first... Maybe it's not the opening track. No, Secondhand News.
Oh.
Total Shuff Dun Dun Dun. Do you have that? You don't have that? Okay. I'm going to be sad. It's a great opening track by Lindsey Buckingham. Done it in karaoke. Which doesn't mean anything.
And you're
that's
proud
actually
of
a
that.
Demerit. That's a demerit.
Yeah.
For me, for Fleetwood Mac, for this podcast.
But another one that's sort of an anthem that we probably don't have time to endure the whole thing is Where the Streets Have No Name. I've said it before. I think that, you know, they were already doing this kind of thing, but to open a record like that was pretty much like throwing down a gauntlet.
I agree.
I've lost the conversation of trying to buy this because iTunes said my email had changed for some reason, so I got completely
distracted.
Oh, you're
buying that song for me? Thank you.
Carrie, you bet I was.
Birthday came early. I made Bob spend 99 cents on a Fleetwood Mac song. Bob, next time I'm with you, I'm going to bring my Fleetwood Mac vinyl, and we're just going to sit down and listen to the whole thing, especially the Christine McVie songs.
You're going to have to keep me calm for a little bit, because understand what that, was the... that I worked in stores when Rumors came out, and I heard it more... Look, there.
Here we go.
I don't know if I can do this.
But it falls. It's exactly what you were talking about.
But that moment that just happened, I imagine the 37 people online wanting to buy it, and I had a
you don't want to promote Fleetwood Mac.
No, it's not that. It was a painful experience to have to listen to this record over and over again when I worked in a store back then. You know, it just was. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I wanted to listen to the thrill of it all. I can't. Carrie, I'll send it to you for your birthday, but I can't play it. Tom, you want to play something for us?
He's going to play Buckingham Nicks.
Yeah, really. Track one from that, pretty great, too. And I'm now trying to remember what track one from the record that's just called Fleetwood Mac is, because I think that's another one that really works, that fits this paradigm, too.
That's nice.
We have to leave Macland now.
I'm going to play some of Carrie's to get that thing out of my head. I love this, Carrie. Thank you so much.
You know what's interesting?
Do we all love this? Is this universal Flaming Groovies love here?
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Shake Some Action. Okay, what's interesting about that song and that album is it's kind of the only... There is this kind of first song where you don't even need to listen to the rest of the album because the first song has just obliterated the rest of the album, and so you just keep playing it over and over again. You never get to songs 2, 3, and 4. I don't even know if I've listened to this B-side of that album ever because Shake Some Action is such a good song.
It was so fresh when it came out, even though it harkened back to a time that wasn't that far before it. You know, this is the early 70s, and this is sort of referencing music from the middle 60s. But it just stripped away everything. It was a very nice, clean, wonderful feel. Something completely different that didn't do that is this here. Anybody a fan of The Move? Any Move fans?
Yeah.
So that's a message from the country. Let's just fly through a bunch of these here. That's one of my favorite opening tracks to an album ever, this message from the country. Well, just a tiny bit more. What am I missing? You know, one of the actually one of the most picked ones. What's this? I think. Right. Yeah. Want to talk about this? Okay, we're back. We're back in the record store, and Jack's standing next to me, looking at me like, "Rob, how could you?" But Tom, this. Very different than the last, the previous two Springsteen records that had come before it. Right?
How many times was this mentioned on the blog? So many times.
Absolutely.
This song was more people brought up Thunder Road than any other song.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, sure.
I mean, why should it be?
You know, it's the elements are so simple, you know, and actually narrative-wise, it isn't that much different from Wildly Innocent, but in a sense, it's totally different. And I think, it has that sense of building within these little elements. Like when the guitar entrance for this is, for me, the thing, mm-hmm. you know. By the time he's at that point, you know, you are following this narrative of these lovers, you know.
Let's hear it kick in. Bruce Springsteen from Born to Run, Thunder Road.
I think we can just call that the slow build.
Yeah,
the slow
yeah.
build is
yeah.
a slow very build, common feature.
The snap and gallop. The whoosh, the station to station kind of open. Which also, this song, if I could do it real quick. Leah, let's do this. You can only hear this, it'll be real quiet. It's almost foretold... Eraserhead years later. But I think what these quiet builds often did was they made you turn it up really loud so you could hear the quiet part, and then you get hit over the head, which is about to happen. Crimson, 1969. We haven't done any jazz. We haven't done any soul. Let's pick some.
Right. Before we leave that world, though, another one that also sneaks in like that and takes forever to develop but is completely amazing is Shine On You Crazy Diamond from Pink Floyd.
That's right.
And that was mentioned a lot. The thing about that is that's one of those track ones that's like a hologram of the whole record. If you once it gets a little bit going and Gilmour starts to, you start to hear guitar solo, you feel like you know that whole record. You're back inside it the whole way, which is, you know, the Zeppelin tracks have that too, but not everything sort of reminds you of six songs at once the way Pink Floyd does. You know, the records that Miles Davis and his quintet from the 60s made have that hologrammatic quality, too, where, you know, you hear a little bit from track one, and even though the mood changes quite a bit in the subsequent tracks, it sort of gives you the character of that whole record. And the one he made in, let's see, it was 1967, called Nefertiti, is like that. And the title track is a Wayne Shorter tune, and it just, as soon as I heard this, I was like, oh, yeah, I remember this whole record. Not free jazz in the sense of Ornette Coleman or any of the people who were really throwing down in 1967. It's not fusion. It's not hard bop in the conventional, like Art Blakey sense. It's this very particular mood, and each piece on that record has a mood, but they all seem to sort of refer back to this, the title track.
And what did it do for folks who had followed Miles previous when they heard that? What was the shift? Was this one of
it wasn't like Seismic, but I think that by the time this was their third or fourth record as this quintet, mm-hmm. and so they'd been playing together for 2 or 3 years, and by the time they get here, they're thinking about these moods, and they're really kind of completely happy to sit in this very sort of slow, open, medium tempo groove for 6 or 7 minutes and follow, you know, Miles, Wayne Shorter, Tony Williams, Herbie Hancock, wherever they're going. And I think that, you know, it was sort of like this band was incredibly telepathic, and it took a minute for listeners to sort of get the frameworks. And by this record, the frameworks are pretty clear. They're small, they're skeletal little tunes, but boy, you know, the moods are become huge out of them.
You know who it was a weird one that didn't have a great, I didn't think, had an epic first track was Stevie Wonder, because I was like, oh, he has so many great albums.
I know.
Really, I think Stevie Wonder had great opening tracks.
Really?
Yeah. Love's a Needed Love Today, isn't that an opening track?
Yeah, that's the best one out of all of them.
Yeah, that's the best one.
But there's
that song makes me cry.
The songs that bring me to those albums are not the openers.
Good morning or evening, friends. Here's your friendly announcer. I have serious news to pass on to everybody. What I'm about to say couldn't mean the world's disaster.
I'm not going to play anymore, but when that chorus comes in, I get the chills every time that Love's in Need of Love Today. Oh, here it comes.
Side two, though.
What's that?
Side two starts with I Wish.
Yeah.
I don't know. And
yeah, those double ones are hard, because then you had four. We'll have to do side three, track one. We'll be the next show we'll do.
Isn't She Lovely start side three? I mean, that's...
Yeah.
That's just an amazing record.
And As starts side four, doesn't it? That great?
This is a whole new show.
Side three, cut one. Tom Mooney, pick another good R&B one for us.
Well, Marvin Gaye. Actually, for an opening track and a closing track on What's Going On, that album opens with What's Going On. It's another one of these ones where it sets out a whole world. Within one verse, he's given you a lot to chew on, and you can feel like where he's at in the world, what he's thinking about. Gorgeous.
Let's play What's Going On.
Hey, what's happening?
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today.
A fantastically recorded record. I mean, putting the fact that it's great soul and the performances are fantastic, just the recording of that record is just wonderful. Tom, you brought up the idea of great closing tracks, and I think that's what we got to do. I think we got to close out the track with a great closing track, and we could do the Marvin Gaye. Anybody else have a great closing track?
Well, I chose one that we from an album we've already played at the beginning of the show, which was Prince's Purple Rain, which ends Purple Rain. I mean, by then, I mean, you've been in Prince's world for, you know, 40 minutes, and you're just a puddle on the floor. it's Purple Rain. It's like the full journey.
Also church, you know? Yeah. It's like sort of a continuation of the sermon that he starts with Let's Go Crazy.
Well, I think it's time to put up a blog post. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to figure out the best closing track on a record. We'll put that blog post up. You can read so many great suggestions on the All Songs Considered blog. Thank you, Tom Moon. Thank you, Carrie Brownstein. This is fun.
Thank you.
Thank you. I never meant to call you.